You are listening to a sermon by Annika Kraus, recorded on Sunday, April 27th, 2025, at Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speakers are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Good morning, everybody. It's lovely to join you digitally, but great to be in community with you. So the word enemy is kind of a loaded and heavy word and kind of archaic. It's not something we use too often anymore. And Melissa Flora Bixler, who is a Mennonite pastor and theologian in the U.S., wrote a book called How to Have an Enemy. And in her book, she defines enemy as a person who uses their power, either actively or passively, to harm or dominate another. And it's a definition that is quite fitting for our passage today. The context of our Luke passage is that Luke is writing this gospel after the fall of the temple to the Romans in 70 CE. His audience is an occupied people who have historically been occupied many times before and are living under Pax Romana, a peace at the end of a sword under Roman rule. And they have this in common with Jesus and his disciples, who also lived in Palestine during Roman occupation. And into this context, Luke writes the teachings of Jesus, telling people they are called to love their enemies in the name of God, to pray for them and bless them. It's a hard lesson to absorb at the very least, hard enough in interpersonal contexts, but in a systemic context of oppression, I imagine it would feel next to impossible for a lot of people. And our text says, I use the NRSV, so it's a little bit different. Our text says, if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. This list of loving, turning the other cheek, and lending without expectation is, of course, not an exhaustive list, but at first glance seems to advocate for submission or passivity in the face of oppressive forces. But in reality, what it's doing is calling for a paradigm shift away from that Pax Romana towards love of others, seeking to bring about change through radical love. And love is not passive, but very active and impactful. To love someone is to seek their flourishing. In my community here in Montreal, we've been talking a lot about conflict resolution over the last year. We've had several speakers come and share with us, people who work in the field of conflict resolution. And one woman who came to share with us, her name is Katar El-Alawi, and she's done all kinds of interesting work. She herself is a Muslim woman, and she has done work with between Muslims and Jewish people, talking about the conflict and relationships there. And in her work, she talks about the importance of seeking the flourishing of others, how part of flourishing is not seeking to convert or force your point of view on others, but to understand that we can all listen and learn from each other's stories. Flourishing requires meaningful relationships with diverse groups of people. It requires safety to be ourselves, opportunity, acceptedness, access to resources. In other words, we very much need each other in order to flourish. Every one of us. And to advocate for the flourishing of our enemies with the understanding that I just mentioned is also to advocate for the flourishing of those who are near to us, our family and our friends. During Trump's first presidency, when there was the controversy of immigrant families or migrant families being separated and children were put in cages, I went to a protest. In Vancouver, this was before I moved to Montreal, and we ended up outside of Trump's building downtown, and we were protesting what was going on, and a man came out with his daughter, and he laughed at the group of us standing there, And he started joking, saying, "Oh, we love Trump," trying to antagonize us. And sure enough, we, myself included, started yelling back at him, saying, "You know, you're such a jerk," all kinds of things, hurling at him. And then the protest leader turned to all of us and said, "No, no, like, stop, stop." And you could see that his about 12-year-old daughter who was with him was quite uncomfortable trying to get him to stop antagonizing us. And the protest leader had us all calm down. And he said something that I'm never going to forget. He said, "We would do this. We would be here for your daughter too." And it was a very different approach to this mob of people who are hurling insults at this man. And I don't know what he thought, but that moment had a significant impact on me. Our passage goes on to tell us that by loving our enemies, by not responding to violence with violence, and by giving without expecting anything in return, we are imitating God. Mary Schurz, an ancient Greek scholar, an expert in Luke Acts, and professor emeritus at AMBS, has written her own translation from the Greek that I think adds some much needed nuance and clarity. This work of translation is scholarly exegesis, or biblical interpretation, and she changes the word credit in the NRSV to grace in her own translation. If you love those who love you, what kind of grace is that? Even sinners love those who love them. This concept of grace for others connects with the end of our passage when Jesus says that to love our enemies is to imitate God. We should be gracious with all others because God is gracious and we are children of God. Verses 35 and 36 say, "But love your enemies, do good and lend, expecting nothing in return. Your reward will be great and you will be called children of the Most High. For he is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful." However, both Schurz and Flora Bixler point out that despite love of enemy being at the core of Christian teaching, the church throughout history has often failed to act this out. Flora Bixler goes on to warn that the more current dangers of the "we shouldn't be divided by politics" mentality. She explained that this is a bit of a dangerous mentality. The concept of loving your enemies does not mean that there should not be pushback against the people using their power to oppress others or who advocate for the oppression of others. She points out that largely the North American churches that advocate for this kind of mentality are middle-class, predominantly white churches that won't overly be affected by who's in charge of making policies anyways. However, this "don't let politics divide us" mentality does add fear and grief to people who are food insecure, people whose status in their country is unsure, and people who are targeted minorities. She goes on to point out how part of the concern is that Christian nationalists or fundamentalists can't differentiate between the loss of control or power and being oppressed themselves, leading to misguided understandings of their roles in society. So, how do we love someone or a group of people who believe that their worldview should be forced on others, often through political process, insisting that they should be able to make decisions for other supposedly less moral people? The response might be a bit of a surprise, and that is to start with curiosity. Listen to what they have to say. Don't repay insult with insult. Be respectful, even if they aren't, and find ways to relate, because at our foundation, we are all human, and we can always find something to relate on. Think about context. What has made this person get to where they are? And in all of this, it's important to have good boundaries, to prioritize safety, to recognize when a person is unable to have a meaningful conversation, and recognize their limits. But even in such a context, we can be examples of love and we can pray. Too often we talk at each other without any genuine desire to understand each other. Ultimately, as Flora Bixler puts it, the renewed order, pardon me, the renewed order of Jesus' reign of love and peace is not designed for the destruction of anyone. Now, not to confuse systemic concerns with interpersonal ones, but I want to share a lovely example of someone loving their enemies until they became friends. There's a man in the southern United States by the name of Daryl Davis, and he's a Black man, and he has made it his mission in life to befriend members of the KKK. He actively seeks out these relationships and creates bonds, finds ways to relate to them, to understand them, and eventually, often, they give up their role in the KKK. And when they choose to leave, they give him their robe. And so in his home, he has a closet full of KKK robes from friends who have changed their minds on what it means to live in this world with love and respect. It's a beautiful story and one that encourages us to also seek out ways to relate and understand other people. To conclude, I want to read you an abridged version of this passage that's slightly reimagined. But I say to you that listen, help those who abuse power for their own gain to understand the true meaning of flourishing. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you and pray for those who oppress you. If you only contribute to the flourishing of those who do the same for you, what kind of grace is that? Everyone does that. But imitate God by loving your enemies, and so become a child of God. Amen.